Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to show 68 of Absolutely Intercultural. My name's Anne Fox, and the show is coming to you today from Denmark. Let's start with a bit of Shakespeare. All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances. And one man in his time plays many parts, his acts being seven ages. At first, the infant mewling and puking in the nurse's arms. And then the whining schoolboy, with his satchel and shining morning face, creeping like snail unwillingly to school. I'll stop right there, because it's our attitude to school which is going to be the main topic of the show today. And if you want to know the rest, then you'll have to revisit As You Like It. And by the way, this will not be the last time that Shakespeare gets a mention in this show. And now a question. What sort of people would have the following as career aspirations?
Engineer, scientist, cardiologist, engineer, teacher, fighter pilot, engineer.
And what might be a key difference in the way high school students spend their time in different parts of the world?
When you're face down in the pool for 4 hours, you should realize that there is a 14-year-old girl, in fact there are four 14-year-old girls in India and four 14-year-old girls in China, that are studying math or physics.
In the last show, we explored some of the many cultural aspects of learning apparent in one educational institution. And in this show, we're going to stick with the idea of learning culture, but this time on a worldwide basis. I mentioned the 2 Million Minutes project very briefly in the show on China and the Olympics, but I was so intrigued by the project that I got in touch with Bob Compton, the man behind it, so that I could find out more. So we'll start the show by being absolutely educated. What do you want to be when you grow up? According to Bob Compton, the answer you give to this question when you're 6 or 7 years old says a great deal about how successful your country is going to be economically in the future. Be honest now, what would your answer have been at that age? Bob Compton is worried about the economic consequences of the American education system, but sees the problem as arising from different cultural attitudes to learning and teachers. He decided to raise awareness about the competition from India and China by making a film following the lives of 6 high school students from the 3 different countries. The project is called 2 Million Minutes, and I asked Bob to tell us more.
Well, what I am trying to address with 2 Million Minutes is to let viewers become aware of what has happened in education in India and China, and then get them to think what the implications are of the 2 largest countries in the world having the best educated population. What does that mean economically for the long term for the U.S., for Europe, for the rest of the world?
So your main audience is the U.S., and it's a sort of wake-up call, basically.
It is, yes. The U.S. education system has declined in quality over the last 30 years, and really not only the education system, but we actually have a bigger issue with our culture. The American culture does not really recognize or reward academic and intellectual achievement the way we do athletic achievement. And in India and China, those are civilizations that are thousands of years old, that in Hinduism and Confucianism have a culture that reveres and recognizes and rewards intellectual achievement. They've got the right culture for the 21st century, because both countries have a culture that values intellectual achievement and holds teachers and educators in high esteem. And now they've got leadership in place that realizes that's the way to lift their populations out of poverty. And the rest of the world, America and Europe in particular, really haven't changed our education system. And I would argue, at least in the case of America, we have the perfect education system for the 1950s.
So you've identified this big problem, which is a growing gap, as you see it, between India, China, primarily, and the United States. And you decided to make a film about it.
Well, what precipitated it was in 2005, I went over to Bangalore, India, with the chief executive officer of one of my software companies, where I served as chairman of the board. And our first night there, we took 100 of our programmers, software programmers, out to dinner and put them at different tables, and then I would move from table to table and chat with them. And I actually expected it to be a pretty dull night, to be candid. I mean, I thought I was going to be with a bunch of science and math nerds, as we say here in America, and that I wouldn't have much to talk to them about. I was surprised to discover they were incredibly articulate, globally aware, knew American history. We talked about Shakespearean literature. So their knowledge of Shakespeare was vastly superior to mine. And they just were, you know, incredibly fun to be with. Great senses of humor, creative people. And this was so opposite of the stereotype I had, having never been to India before, that it really just startled me. And I asked them, you know, how did you all get this way? And they said, well, we learned it in school. So I spent the next 3 weeks there in India visiting colleges. And the colleges really, they don't have anywhere near the number of colleges that Europe and America have, nor the quality. They have a top tier of great colleges. But where the differences really show up are in high school, middle school, and primary school. And the seminal moment for me, actually there were two seminal moments, but one was I was in a first grade class in Bangalore with 5 and 6 year old Indian children. And I asked their teacher if I could ask each child just one question. And the one question was, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I had my digital camera, and I went from child to child, and the answers were engineer, scientist, cardiologist, engineer, teacher, fighter pilot, engineer. And that
wow.
Absolutely floored me, because 5 and 6 year olds don't typically talk that way. And when I asked the little girl, for example, what a cardiologist was, she knew it was a heart doctor. I mean, these were not just words they were mouthing. And when I asked, you know, one boy what kind of engineer he wanted to be, he said, well, I don't know if I want to be an auto engineer or an airplane engineer. I mean, they knew what these careers did. So that surprised me. And then I asked if I could sit down with some teenage girls. I have two teenage daughters, now 14 and 16, but asked if I could sit down with some teenage girls that were close in age to my daughters and just talk to them about what they were studying. And within a few minutes, I realized my daughters, who were straight-A students, go to a very expensive private school here in America, and are very bright, but they are 2 to 3 years behind their Indian peers in math, physics, chemistry, biology, and computer science. And I later, subsequently in China, discovered the same thing. I came back to America. I repeated the first grade experiment in American first grade several times. And they would ask American first graders, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I got everything from rock star to movie star to teacher to fireman to policeman, you know, all kinds of careers. The only two careers that I never heard mentioned by a first grader in America are engineer and scientist. I think the aspirations of your first graders may actually be an early indicator of which direction your economy is going. So I came back, and I totally changed how I educate my own daughters. And then as I talked to friends about it, you know, just trying to describe it, just you actually have to see it to believe it. You have to see the enthusiasm that a 17-year-old Indian boy talks about physics with. I mean, he just, you know, I love physics. It's, you know, there's always an answer. It's a unique challenge. And you need to see that enthusiasm. You need to see Apoorva, the Indian girl, interacting with her father talking about schools or careers. I mean, there is, both countries have very tight-knit families compared to America. You know, in China, of course, they have the one-child law, so they just have one child, and they focus all their energy and all their resources and all their hopes and dreams on that one child. And in India, that just the culture there is the parents and teenagers are very close, which is almost the opposite of the U.S. So until you see it, you can't quite believe it, and so I decided to make a film and show what I saw. And just following, we picked a boy and a girl, senior in high school in all three countries. I wanted students who were in the top 5% academically, but who also were looked up to by their peers. So in America, you get a young man named Neil, who academically is in the top 5%. He's also the captain of the football team and president of the student body. And in China, you get Ru Zhang, who is in the top 5% of his school and is held up in high esteem by his classmates because he has won major math competitions all around China. While academically they're the same, the students recognize and look up to very different attributes. And so that's why we made the film.
Bob kept asking me about how things were in Europe generally, and Denmark in particular. But having never experienced anything other than the European education system, it was difficult for me to say. So when I heard that one of my colleagues was hosting an American student through the Rotary Youth Exchange Program, I jumped at the chance for a chat with her to find out how the Danish gymnasium compares to the American high school. Let's go absolutely Rotary.
I'm Brittany Alcorn, and I come from New Mexico in the USA.
Were you in high school before you left?
Yes, I was a sophomore. This year I would be a junior in high school. Back home, I have 7 classes during the day, and each of them are about 45 minutes. And in between classes, I have a 3-minute break to get to each class. And here I have only 2, 3, or 4 classes a day, and they're 90 minutes, and I have 15-minute breaks. And also back home, I take the same classes every day of the week, and here my classes change, and every other week they change, so that's nice.
What do you mean? Do you mean in the States it might be, say, maths first, then English, then geography every single day?
Yes. Yeah, it gets boring after a while.
And what about the amount of homework that you get? Is that comparable?
I think there's more homework over here than in the U.S. And back at my school, we only got homework a couple of classes and just not every day.
Can I ask you about the range of subjects that you're taking? Are they similar or are there some big differences? Apart from the Danish, of course.
They're pretty similar, except I have these classes over here called AP, and I don't have them back home. In my school, AP is grammar and Latin and stuff, and I don't have that back home.
What about the time of day when you start and the time of day when you finish? Is that any different?
Yeah, it's different because over here, sometimes my classes are canceled, and sometimes I only have 2 or 3 classes a day. And back home, every day I start at 8:30 and end at 3:30. And here I start at 8:40 and end at 12, 2, or at 3:30.
What about the level of the studies that you're doing here? Are they more or less comparable?
Well, here is their first year of the gymnasium, and I learned a lot of stuff that they're learning last year in my second year of high school. But some of the stuff, they're kind of advanced.
And where are they advanced, for example?
In, like, I would say math and some sciences. And probably foreign language, because, well, they speak English fluently, and they've been taking it about the same time I've been taking Spanish.
So it seems that the Danish situation is probably closer to the American model than the Indian and Chinese models. Back with Bob Compton, I asked him to explain the title of the project, and then wanted to know more about some of the main observations made in the film. He picked out the differing parental aspirations as a key difference. Let's be absolutely concerned.
So it's called 2 million minutes because that's the amount of time that an individual lives during any 4-year period. Now, and actually, my Indian and Chinese friends tell me it's 2,102,400 minutes, which is, in fact, accurate. But as I explained to them, that's not, from a marketing standpoint, that's a little harder to sell. So we rounded it down, but 2 million minutes is the amount of time you live, whether you're studying, sleeping, playing sports, working a job, whatever. And I focused on high school because for, in America, 75% of our population, that's the highest formal education they'll ever have. So the vast majority of Americans, high school is their last, is their last education other than work-related education. And so how students spend their 2 million minutes in high school, one, will affect their own careers. But if you look at an entire country, collectively, how your high school students spend their 2 million minutes is going to affect your economic potential as a country in the decades ahead. So when you look at the high school experience, I wanted to look at how do Indian kids spend their time, how do Chinese teenagers spend their time, and how do American teenagers spend their time. And in fact, you discover they spend their time in all three cultures quite differently.
Can we now look at some of the more interesting findings that you show in your film?
Yes. One of the things that really surprised me, I mentioned that both Indian and Chinese families are much more close-knit and the parents are much closer to their children in terms of guiding them as to what they would do. There's a scene in the film where we ask Apoorva, who's the Indian girl, we ask her father. So we put a camera in front of him and we ask her father, what are your hopes and dreams for your daughter? Now, in America, when you ask that question, it's, I want my child to be happy. I want him to lead an enjoyable life. His first comment, without any prompting, is my goal is to make sure my daughters, he has two daughters, make sure my daughters are globally competitive. When we interviewed the American parents, their reaction was, I want them to get a good job. I want them to be happy. I want them to be healthy. And, I'm pleased with all they have on their plate. I'm pleased that they don't get into trouble. And it was just there were no kind of globally aware aspirations on the part of American parents. Americans, I would say, as a country, tend to be very self-centered and not aware of what's going on in the global economy.
Ah, but, say the objectors, it's not healthy to study all the time. What about creativity? A running theme through the project seems to be the musical prowess of the Chinese on all sorts of instruments. Even the translator could play something on the accordion. Let's go absolutely musical. So having seen the situation in India and China, did this have any effect on Bob Compton's family at an individual level? I asked him in particular about his daughter's education and discovered that the family had made radical changes. So let's go absolutely prepared.
What have you done in order to try and make your daughters catch up?
Yes. Well, they still are in private school. They used to be year-round competitive swimmers, which meant they would spend 4 hours each day, 6 days a week, year-round in the swimming pool, because that's what it takes. To be competitive in athletics in America, you have to start when you're about six or seven, and you have to train year-round. And so you spend anywhere from 20 to 30 hours a week year-round in athletics. Well, after I got back from India, and my daughters and I, we talked about what I saw, I said there's tremendous value in team sports. I played team sports and individual sports, but I played team sports when I was in high school. But I didn't train year-round. You know, I played football during football season. What we concluded, and it took a while for my girls, you know, they watched the film. It took a lot of discussion, but I said, when you're face down in the pool for 4 hours, you should realize that there is a 14-year-old girl. In fact, there are 4 14-year-old girls in India and 4 14-year-old girls in China that are studying math or physics. Whatever you want to do, I want you to have the widest possible selection when you go into college and then become an adult, that I think it is a better use of your time to pursue more math and science than to pursue swimming. And then we have tutors for them, the year-round tutors in math, science, and writing. So she has a very heavy academic load. In America, usually you get tutors when your child is struggling. In India and China, you get tutors when your children are excelling, because you want to actually see if they can do even better and go faster and learn more. And because in India and China, it matters. See, to get into college in India and China, the college application is your name and your score on a massive entrance exam. It ranges anywhere from 6 to 8 hours in each country. It doesn't matter if you played sports. It doesn't matter if you played an instrument. They don't care about anything else except your intellectual attainment. And so, but here in the States, it's, and I don't know about Europe, but here in the States, it's, you know, what did you do in your extracurriculars? How did you do in your classes? Letters of recommendation? What's the college looking for? You know, I served on the board of an engineering school, and we regularly turned down students who had perfect scores on their tests because we needed somebody else who didn't have a perfect score, because we needed a quarterback for the football team, or we needed a tuba player for the orchestra.
I was interested in this project for what it told me about cultural differences in the attitude to education. But there have also been some very strong negative reactions to this project, because it tends to view education in purely utilitarian terms. Where do you stand on this? Let us know on the blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com. What's the learning culture in your country? Is it closer to the Indian and Chinese models, or closer to the American model? You'll find lots more information about the 2 Million Minutes project at their website, where you can even take an Indian maths test. And you'll find many film snippets about the backstory behind the project on their dedicated channel at YouTube. Well, that's it for today. The next show will be coming to you from Germany on October 31st by Laurent Borgmann. Oh, and just before I go, I would like to do a show exploring some of the new social networking language learning websites which have sprung up in the last year or so. So if you've got any experience as a user of sites such as Live Mocha, Pelabia, Mango Languages or Babbel, then get in touch, because I'd like to know if they really work. In the meantime, stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturell.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.